Hi, I'm Jamie from Stillmeyer Games, and today I'm going to talk about my top 10 favorite games that needed a second chance. So these are games where I played them once, and I knew I was missing something, because I maybe didn't have a great time the first time I played, but I gave them another chance. And this is something I don't always do for games, and I probably don't do it often enough. I play a lot of games one time, and then I decide, you know, am I excited to play again or not? I did a video even about this recently, games that I'm excited to play again immediately after the first time I played them. But I really don't play games the second time all that much, unless I really love that first play. Those first impressions matter, but I'm glad I gave these games a second chance because they've become some of my favorite games. I'm going to talk about those style of games today. I asked this question to other people, too, to see if there are any patterns that emerge from the types of games that they played once and almost gave up on before playing again and realizing they were missing out on something brilliant and fun. And a few, so here are some games that Stillmeyer Ambassadors mentioned. And there are going to be some Stillmeyer games on this list because they're Stillmeyer Ambassadors. They've played our games more than once, or at least they've been willing to give our games a second chance. So games that were mentioned multiple times by Ambassadors were Agricola, Ark Nova, Brass, Game of Thrones, Great Western Trail, Libertalia, Root, Tapestry, Terra Mystica, Terraforming Mars, Too Many Bones, Viticulture, and Wingspan. And some of these ambassadors were very kind to share their thoughts on why those games didn't resonate them for the first time. I'm going to go through this list quickly, but I think it'll come up again as I'm talking about my top 10 list. So some of the reasons that they mentioned that the game did not resonate with them the first time, and some of these are unrelated to the game itself. A good reminder that the experience of the game goes beyond the game's components themselves. One was there was a bad, or one that came up a lot was there was a bad teach. The teacher didn't do a good job. Overwhelming complexity, punishing mechanisms. Agricola came up with this one where they felt it was too punishing of a game. They couldn't figure out how to work their way around the punishment of Agricola the first time they played. Maybe they're too new to the hobby, like they were thrown into a game where they weren't really ready for that game yet. In fact, I have a video about this where I talk about sequential games to ramp someone up into more complex games. Talk about the wrong environment to play this style of game. Wrong expectations about the weight of the game. They were expecting something that wasn't delivered in the game. The game overstayed its welcome. They were missing the efficiency puzzle of the game. So this is an interesting category. Games with A, B sides for complexity. So where A sides is kind of the default complexity, or you can ramp up for the advanced side. And maybe the game made the A side a little bit too easy or too uninteresting. But when they tried to get on the B side, they were really engaged by the game. And last, if there were too many critical decisions during setup. This is something I talked about a lot on this channel. If you give players too many important, or the feeling that they have to make too many important decisions during setup before they fully understand how the game works, that can be a big deterrent because 10 minutes into the game, they can be like, oh, I really wish I hadn't made this choice before I understood how the game played. And now they're just kind of stuck with the game for the next hour or so. So these are definitely all, well, most of these things are things that you can design around, or at least produce a game where you are very clear in terms of the packaging of the game, the explanation of the game, as to what players are getting into when they play this game. So let's jump over to my other screen here and talk about my top 10. The first game, you can see it on the screen already, Challengers. Challengers is a game that I played. And really, these aren't all games that I loathe the first time I played. But there are games that just I didn't quite get what the appeal was the first time I played. I played Challengers, I believe, for the first time at a convention, and I had a fine time. And I could tell that the people around me were having a great time. And I was like, I know there's something special is happening here. I don't quite get it yet. And Challengers, it's a deck-building game, but when you actually sit down and duel against the other player, you don't make many choices. Most of the choices are, it's kind of an auto-battler at that point, where you are just revealing the top card of your deck and seeing if you win or lose. There are some decisions that go in there about in terms of like where to, there are a few cards that give you choices, but for the most part, it's automatic. And that felt weird. It felt different to me. I hadn't played a game like that before where I didn't have many choices while I was actually playing the game. What I didn't realize is that the deck building is really the main choice that you're making in the game. And also during the deck building phase of each round, not only are there interesting choices, but also there are choices there that on some of the cards that let you make choices during the auto battler phase of the game. So it was a game where I was like, I'm having a good time, but I am not quite understanding this element of the game where I am missing out on making choices, or I am missing out on making choices during the dueling part of the game, until I realized that that wasn't the core choice part of the game. I had different expectations for what a game could be in general, and this game opened me up to the idea that there can be phases of a game that are automated where you can admire the choices that you've already made in the game. That's what Challengers is all about. So I have Challengers at number 10 on this list. At number 9, I have Heat Pedal to the Metal, a game that has raced up the rankings on BoardGameGeek. I played it twice on the same weekend. I learned it and taught it to some people. And even as I was teaching the game, I wasn't understanding how the card play really worked. I mean, I understood how it worked, but I didn't understand how to make good decisions during the card play of the game, because there are lots of crucial decisions in Heat about which cards to play at which time, depending on especially corners and passing cards, other cards on the track, the timing of when you choose to play those cards and how you interact with Heat in your deck, how you use Heat, which seems like something that's just clogging up your deck, but it can actually, it's a really important resource in the game. I didn't get that the first time I played. But again, I knew I was missing something because I'd heard so many great things about it, and I could see other players figuring it out faster than I could. And so I gave the game another chance on the same day, later on that same day, and played it again. And I just understood the game better at that point and played a lot better and had a lot more fun. I don't think I won that game, but I still understood the decisions I was making about the card play a lot better. And so this is definitely a game, I think, Heat, where the mechanisms are pretty streamlined. It's not all that complex of a game, unless you're the one learning the rules. But the depth of the game that emerges from when you play your cards has a huge impact on the game. And I didn't quite get that until the second play. So I have Heat at number 9 on my list. At number 8, I have another game that I played. Actually, both of these games are played. I played at Gamers Ranch, a place in Missouri where you can just go play games for a long weekend. Turing Machine is my number 8 game. Because the first time I played Turing game, even as I was hearing the explanation, I really had no idea what was going on. This is a logic puzzle game where you are trying to deduce a logic puzzle where you're eliminating certain possibilities and retaining others faster than the other players. You all have the same puzzle that you're working on in real time, and you do have some choices as to what you're testing. And even as I'm describing this, it is a very difficult game to describe and understand how it works the first time it plays. I think it is a great game to play back-to-back, because the first time you play, I think it's just really difficult to understand how it works, how this logic puzzle works. And so I played it once, and I really had no idea what was going on. By the end of the game, I was like, okay, I can kind of see how the choices I'm making about the cards relate to this idea that I'm eliminating certain options, I'm gaining other options that I think could be viable, that could be the right answer here. But by the end of the first game, I got it. I understood it. It was too late for me to really do well in that first game. But in the second game, I had full understanding, and it just really clicked with the way my brain worked, or works in general. And so I do really like these logic puzzles. I just wasn't sure how this game used those logic puzzles in the way that it did. Turing Machine, I think, is a great puzzle of a game that deserves to be played twice. I think I would be hard-pressed to see anyone who really understands this game fully the first time you play. So, yeah, Turing Machine is number 8 on my list of games that I really didn't appreciate the brilliance of it and how much fun I would have from it until I played it a second time. And number 7 is a game somewhat on the same spectrum as Turing Machine in that it is a fairly simple, streamlined game. It is Love Letter. That's the game that I'm showing you here on screen. Love Letter is my number 7 pick. Love Letter seemed so simple the first time I played it that I wasn't sure what choices I was really making. In Love Letter, you have a card in your hand. You have two cards in your hand. You are playing one of them and making a choice based on that card. And that's it. Like, it's a very simple game, and you're just trying to outlast the opponents. And oftentimes, you will just get eliminated. You don't have complete control over when you will be eliminated in this game. What I think I didn't realize the first time I played it, though, is that it is meant to be a casual, low-thought game. There are good choices to make in Love Letter. Especially good deductive choices. Another game like Turing Machine, where you're deducing what cards your opponents have based on what's already been played and what's in your hand. But if you don't know those cards very well yet, it's hard to do that deduction. There's a little nice reference guide that you can put in front of you to see, but it's a little hard to keep track of that the first time you play. But also just understanding that the game is meant to be very fast. It's at least a round of the game. You can play multiple times in a row, play to, you know, best of three or first player to get two right or three right. Or to be the last player standing in any given round. So to understand, have that expectation about the weight of the game and how long it's meant to last, and to understand the different cards in play, because you really need to know these cards to fully understand a game of Love Letter. I didn't get that the first time I played, but the more I played it, the more I appreciated the weight of the game, the headspace that was needed for the game, or really the lower amount of headspace that was needed for the game. And I better understood the cards and I understood how often I needed to actually look at the reference guide to understand what the other cards were doing. So that's Love Letter at number 7 on my list. And number 6 is a game that has grown to be one of my favorites. That's Lost Ruins of Arnak. The first time I played it, I was entranced by the look of the game, and I knew the mechanisms were mechanisms that I would enjoy if I understood them better. There's deck building, there's track advancement, there's worker placement, all mechanisms that I love. But what I didn't fully appreciate the first time I played, and I have two actually games back-to-back that will have this element of them, I did not understand the efficiency puzzle. And I think in games where they really want you to try to stretch out your round or your turn to get one more benefit, one more turn, they are pretty difficult to appreciate the first time you play. And that was definitely the case in Lost Ruins of Arnak, where I did not understand that efficiency puzzle. I did not understand that I was trying to push for one more turn, one more benefit. And so my rounds were lasting a lot shorter than my opponent's rounds, and it felt like I didn't get to do much in the game. The worker placement spaces go fast. They go quickly. I felt like I was missing out on something the first time I played. Then I played it again after I understood that that was the efficiency puzzle, that was a core part of the game, and I really, really enjoyed the game. I've since played all the expansions. We played through the campaign expansion. We've had a delightful time with Lost Ruins of Arnak at number, 6 on my list. The next game is very similar in terms of this efficiency puzzle, and this is Everdell. The first time I played Everdell, I really did not get it. Again, I was charmed by the world building and the art, but I did not understand the efficiency puzzle of the game. Everdell is a game where you were often trying to play something that will allow you to play something else for free, so you can extend your round. You can go a little bit further. You can last a little bit longer in your current season. Players continue. You don't stop at the end of the season in Everdell. You just continue playing. But I didn't get that puzzle. And so I was taking a few worker placement actions. I wasn't stringing together actions or combos or free plays. And my game ended much earlier than other players' games. So games that had this efficiency puzzle, I would say Tapestry is one of these games that I've designed where you're really trying to stretch out your round a little bit longer, one more benefit, one more turn. They're a little bit difficult to fully appreciate the first time you play. And I think I definitely had that experience with Everdell at number 5 on my list. At number 4, I have Soul Clover, and this game has become one of my favorite games. I love Soul Clover. I love the puzzle, the cooperative puzzle in this game. Looks like I have the German version up on the screen here. I think this is German. Maybe. I'm not sure. In Soul Clover, you are trying to give clues to other players to help them guess words. So you're given this random assortment of cards, and you have to write a single word on each of these pieces of the clover, and then you mix up these cards with another card, and other players have to help guess. It's a great puzzle. I love this puzzle. I was coming to it from the context of Just One, a game that I also really, really love. And Soul Clover is, in my opinion, a heavier game. It involves a deeper level of choice and a little bit more pressure on you, I would say, to come up with some clever answers. Instead of just coming up with one word at a time, you're coming up with 4 words at a time and then putting it out for all players to determine and try to figure out what's the correct orientation of these cards. I think it's a more difficult game than Just One. And I wasn't ready for that, for this style of game. I've come to really appreciate it, but I think context matters sometimes. And the context that I had for Soul Clover was that it was going to be similar to Just One. And it is. It's just a little bit heavier, requires a little bit more thought that goes into the things that you write down when you fill out your clover here. So just an element of context, but I've really come to appreciate and really love the game Soul Clover at number 4 on my list. On a game for on the opposite end of the spectrum is A Feast for Odin. This is a worker placement game with, I believe, around 61 different worker placement action spots. And the first time I played it, I was really overwhelmed. I knew that there were things here that I liked. I liked the polyomino. I liked the worker placement. I liked the pusher luck elements of the game, but I was overwhelmed by the sheer number of choices presented to you by this game. However, I played again, and I somewhat appreciated the next time I played that I didn't need to understand all 61 actions. I could just take an action and just run with it and see how it went. The game gives you that ability to go after a bunch of different actions, or go after, not randomly, but choose an action and try to deliver on that action to the best of your ability and just go down that strategic path in the game. The game allows you to do that. A Feast Roden allows you to do that. And so as soon as I gave myself permission to not understand all 61 actions and just to kind of poke and prod it, to try different actions to see how they went, the game really opened up for me and I really, really enjoyed it. And I've come to enjoy it over many plays since then. That's A Feast for Odin. Skull King. Skull King is one of my favorite trick-taking games. I love this game. I love how it escalates from round to round because you start out with a one-card hand, then you go two cards, three cards, so and so on. And again, I talked about context a little bit earlier with Silk Clover. When I played Skull King, I was in love with a game called Wizard, and I still really enjoy Wizard. But Wizard does some things that are very similar to Skull King. It's also a trick-taking game. It's also a game where that escalates. Your hand size escalates from round to round, and your points escalate from round to round. I really loved Wizard at the time, and I played Skull King, and it was maybe a touch more complex because there are some special abilities, some different card interactions in Skull King. And so at the time, I was like, you know, I already have Wizard. Skull King was fine, but I'm just going to go back to Wizard. But over time, I found myself, I tried Skull King again, and I realized that I loved certain elements of Skull King more than Wizard. And at the time, I just wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for these different abilities that you find in Skull King. I wasn't ready for the escalation in scoring for a nil bid in Skull King. But then when I became ready for it, I found that I really loved it. And for me, then Skull King has replaced Wizard. I still have both in my collection, but I go back to Skull King over and over again, both because of the mechanisms. I really enjoy the art in Skull King. And so it was one of these cases where I thought I knew the game that I prefer to play between two similar games until I gave Skull King a few more tries and realized that that was the game for me. Skull King at number two on my list. Last up, we have the Castles of Burgundy. And I've chosen this photo for you because one of the reasons that I really didn't get the Castles of Burgundy, this is the game that had the biggest jump for me between the first play where I was like, you know, I don't need to play this game at all anymore. And the second play where I was like, oh, this game is amazing. I want to play this game a lot. And part of the reason is, unfortunately, the art and color palette of the original game. I really don't want to totally knock on it because I think there is something to be said for the functionality of this art. But, you know, it's a very tan game. There are multiple hues of green, a lot of tan, which is very similar to the yellow in the game. And there's a gray, just the color palette is very muted in this game. And so the art, the graphic design, the look, the aesthetic of the game was part of the deterrent for me. But part of it, too, was the mechanisms of the game. The game is asking you to know a lot about different tiles in the game. But you have to reference a separate guide. And that I believe in the original game, which is the one that I played, there's only one reference guide for the entire table. And so you have to pass around this reference guide to see what this building does. There's no indication as to what this building does on this tile. There's a little bit more on here. It gets a little bit better, but you still, the first time you play, you have to look up what this tile actually means, what this hex means. There's just a lot going on in the game that I didn't fully understand the first time I played. I think the reason I returned to it is because of this player mat. I really did like the puzzle of this player mat, the satisfaction of placing different tiles at different times, of filling up these areas at different times, and getting closer to completing the mat. I never actually completed my mat. I don't know if it's possible, the Castles of Burgundy. But yeah, I didn't get the complexity of the game. I was stifled a little bit by the lack of the reference guides or the lack of clues for how these different tiles worked. And in the original game, to give it credit, there is a tile guide over here, a reference guide, but it's a bunch of icons you don't understand the first time you play. I just want some text to explain how it works. And the newer version of the game does have that. Paired with elements of complexity that I just didn't understand. I just did not get the Castles of Burgundy the first time I played. But then when I returned to it, I realized that it is really a delightful, wonderful game, and that I love many aspects about it, including the how well integrated the dice are into this game. Lots of great choices with these two dice. That made me want to return to it time and time again. The most recent play is the Fancy Collector's Edition. A friend has that copy, and I thought I had a great time playing that. But yeah, the Castles of Burgundy definitely took the biggest jump for me between the first time I played it, how it fell really flat for me, and then the next time where I was like, I really like this game. I want to play it over and over again. So that is the number one game on my list for games that I'm glad I gave a second chance to. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments. A few games, one or two games, that you gave those games a second chance and you're really glad you did, because maybe it fell flat the first time and then it really succeeded the second time. I don't want to use this as a platform to knock on these games, but I do want to learn from it as a designer. So if you can recognize any patterns that designers have control over where they can avoid having a game fall flat the first time, let me know that. Let me know those thoughts in the comments so that designers like me can avoid those pitfalls and hopefully give you a really good experience the first time you play a game. I'd love to hear about that in the comments when you share your examples. Thanks.